The normal apologies before we get on to our work. The Honorable Nika Patelli is still ill. The Honorable Santo is still overseas. The Honorable De Lange is busy chairing a meeting. The Honorable Van Wyk spoke to me last week. She also serves on the police committee and they are presently doing oversight work in the Western Cape. I did excuse her on the understanding that she would make herself available if there was urgent work to be done. The Honorable Jacobus has got a bereavement in the family now. Them are the apologies which I have. Also, just to clear up one matter which both the media and some of the honorable members seem to be confused about. On the 16th of November, the House sat and extended the life of the ad hoc committee to appeared in the order paper to be 21 January. However, in the House that day, it appeared that the Chief Whip's Forum had agreed that the life of the committee be extended to the 28th of January. Hence, if you look at the minutes of the meeting of the 16th of November, you will see that what was agreed that the Chief Whip of the Majority Party moved that the House extend the deadline by the Ad hoc Committee for Protection of Information legislation to report to the House on the 28th of January 2011, which is Friday, this coming Friday. So we will have meetings until Friday. On Friday I will let you know what the position is regarding the rest of the processing of the bill. In the meantime, I did direct a letter to the Honourable House Chair requesting a further extension and had indicated that we are not likely to finalise the bill in January or February. I have not yet received a reply. I take it that if the House sits, it would be one of the matters that the House would consider condoning and also then extending the life of the committee to complete its work. Those are formalities which are not in my hands, but are simple formalities. So I don't think there should be any misunderstanding that the committee's life will come to an end on Friday and that no further work will be done. I think it is a formality that the House will accept that the lifespan of the committee be extended so we can complete its work. When we last met, we had Mr. Enver Daniels present us. We were still busy trying to harmonize provisions of the bill with prior. You will recall that you were given a substantial legal opinion on some of the crucial issues in that particular area. And when we adjourned, I did say, it was beautifully captured in the media, that you ought to consult your lawyers and your experts, those of you who wanted to debate and look into that matter further. I didn't want you to feel that the opinion came on short notice and that you didn't have sufficient time to familiarize yourself and discuss the thing outside the meeting. So we adjourned on that understanding that the honorable members will go and look at that opinion and would then engage Mr. Daniels' office further on any aspects that we are not clear on. The second matter that we said we would deal with today is the request from Ms. Smuts that she wanted to address the committee again on the application of the bill. In her opinion, that once that is sorted out, that the bill might be very easy to deal with it. And we will hear her also today on that once we have just finished the first part that we adjourned for. So, honourable members, you've seen their opinion. The office of and Mr. Daniels is here with his team. If you so wish, you can seek further clarity on those issues. I hand over now to the honourable members. Any further questions on that particular aspect? The honourable.
Chair, we're sitting before us with a choice of a dual system where we've got both PIA and the PIB for access, or the second document purely a PIA access and then the PIB would be purely a classification. What I'd just like to ask the state law advisors, on page 3 of their opinion, they indicate that whilst there's nothing constitutionally that prevents the legislature from granting dual access, the following paragraph is quite incisive, and it seems to indicate certain problems that might arise with the dual access and might indicate a preference to a separation, as we have discussed towards the end of last year, where you have a pure PIA for access and the PIB for classification. If I might just read that paragraph, and I just ask Mr. Daniels to comment on that, where he says it might, however, result, the dual access might result in a kind of forum shopping where people seek access first in terms of one act and then seek access in terms of another act, thereby increasing the administrative burden on officials or organs of state. Officials of organs of state may also be confused as to which legislation to apply in what instance if access may be requested under both PIA and PIB. Providing for access information request under the PIB to be made under PIA and cross-referencing to the Act for all access-related matters in the bill means that the PIB would then deal with the classification and declassification of information and other information protected provisions. I just asked the State Law Advisor whilst it's a policy decision we need to take, but just to comment on that clause if he would. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, thank you. Chairperson, I'm again assisted by my colleagues, Mr. Mkabuzo, Mr. Mlulu, and Ms. Boyser. Mr. Makabeni isn't here yet, but he will be joining us. And Chairperson, if you don't mind, I need to go to Pretoria today, and I will unfortunately have to leave by about 10 minutes in order with you. Thank you, Chair. Chair, as regards the Honourable Swart's question, you will recall that in the original version of the bill, there was a clause which stated that nothing in the bill, or the act, if it was possible, would preclude somebody from making an application under PIA. And we found nothing constitutionally offensive about that. And indeed, we find nothing constitutionally offensive about having a dual system. But insofar as we were asked to provide an opinion, we pointed out to you and to this committee that there are certain problems unintended which may arise in the dual system. It is, of course, a policy decision the committee will have to decide upon, just as the executive has decided on a dual system in the earlier bill. We do think that there may be a kind of forum shopping in the sense that somebody could use PIB and then at a later stage try and access the information through PIA, and that will indeed increase the administrative burden. The committee may want to clarify the position and give those who seek information a choice of using either the Protection of Information Bill or PIA, and to make it clear that the person is being bound to use either one or the other. But there's absolutely nothing constitutionally offensive in our view, even in the dual system which we also use the same approach. I don't think that fully answers the concept as well.
So we applied our minds to your question, which route should we follow? Should Paya be the access avenue for information under the Protection of Information Bill? The proposal is what you might call the Burgess Breakthrough, your suggestion last year. We take the view that it is an elegant solution, having had time to think it through somewhat. It is constitutionally pleasing because it precisely locks into the statute that gives effect to the right to access to information. We agree with Sisa Makabeni's opinion that there are no constitutional issues at issue, that a policy decision. It is nevertheless constitutionally satisfactory that the avenue of access should be the statute that gives effect to the right to information. We listed two clear advantages to creating an access avenue via the PIA. One of them, of course, is the Section 46 override, which means that information must be released in the public interest in certain circumstances. The second is the fact that when you appeal to a court, having exhausted all your other attempts at getting access to information, when you appeal to the court, those proceedings are original proceedings. They are not simply review or appeal proceedings, they are original proceedings. Again, that is highly satisfactory because the person denying the access to information is required to show justification for the decision and not simply perfunctory conclusions, as we have seen in the Supreme Court of Appeal judgment, which you asked the chairman to peruse, which we did with interest. I think you requested for other reasons, but that judgment is a good reminder of how these proceedings work. They are original proceedings, and that is a good thing to have. On the minus side, the disadvantages of making the access avenue via fire are the following. We all know that FIRE isn't really working. We know that there is a phenomenon called the mute refusal. People ask for information, they simply don't get an answer. It is a slow and cumbersome system, it doesn't really work. That is a disadvantage. The diagnosis that has been made for how to cure the FIRE problem is that the appeal body has to be revisited. And I'm talking now not about discussion in this committee, but elsewhere. It is considered that a different appeal body is required in order to make FIRE work. The appeal body as it stands is defined as the relevant authority. If you look at the definitions in FIRE, the relevant authority are the minister, the provincial equivalent, the municipal equivalent, or their delegates. FIRE does not incidentally even attempt to say who the relevant authority is in all of the public bodies and organs outside the organs of state. But the relevant authority to whom you may now appeal is the relevant minister of whatever department you are requesting the information from. Now, quite clearly, that doesn't work. And so there is a proposal in the other information bill, which we are working on, that the information regulator, which we are there creating, should be the appeal authority also for FIRE. It is a matter we haven't decided on. I think that I don't wish to speak for Dr. Albertini, but from our side, it is something we would want. You will know better than I whether the ANC has yet come to a conclusion or what position you intend to take on that. But the creation of the information regulator, which is there for all sorts of other reasons, as also the appeal authority in the case of FIRE, is one solution to getting FIRE to work. Now, you may feel that he or she is the wrong person, so perhaps to put this into our thinking, because that information regulator will be charged with first and foremost looking after our right to privacy, the privacy of our information, and the security of electronic data banks. You may feel that although we still create access via FHIR, perhaps the relevant authority, in the case of security information, may still be someone like the RICA judge, which we have proposed. The RICA judge is someone who works with national security. So I would think that there is the possibility of simply inserting under the definition relevant authority that in the case of national security appeals, those go to someone else, I would say the RICA judge. But by and large, we wish to support you in suggesting access via FHIR. It is the Burgess breakthrough. A couple of thoughts on the Honourable Steve Swart's remark. We agree with Sisa Makabena, who is not here yet to speak to his own opinion, although he did the other day, that forum shopping is a, yes, it is a problem, and people always forum shop, they do. Whether you're dealing with regulators, where people have the option of going to the Competition Commission or to ICASA, they will always forum hop. People exercise their best interest. So we must assume that people would forum hop if we have the dual system. I think that does create some burden. There is no doubt a danger, as Cesar argues, that may confuse implementers. And as we know, the first principle of the rule of law is that the law must be clear, precise, and implementers, as well as we who must obey the law, implementers must be quite, quite clear about what it is that they are required to do. So perhaps it is neater also from that point of view. Thank you.
Allow me just to say, I refuse to take credit for this Burgess thing that you find. It was in the circumstance of the proposal that was put to the state law advisors to have a look at. It's not meant to be a Burgess proposal. Is going to work, obviously it seems it might be very, very appropriate if it does work, but what we are busy with now is trying to see if it's going to work. Honourable members?
Yes. Chairperson, thank you. you've asked us to look at this and we've done so. We've never been in favor of a dual system for the reasons set out in Daniel's opinion. It has always been our view that access to information can only be provided for in FHIR and not in protection of state information law. Its very purpose prevents it from doing so. And as has already been stated, the dual system will be very messy. It cannot be expected of the protection of state information law to solve the problem that exists in FHIR or the implementation thereof. If there are problems that exist in FHIR, then we must fix FHIR. Not seek to address those problems in the protection of state information law. So we are grateful that this matter is before us and it's finally being resolved, because the whole question of the public interest defense has been a sword that's been waved around for some time. Whereas it has always been our view that that defense exists in FHIR. And so if you request information via FHIR and it's denied you, your public interest defense is there in FHIR. That being the case, there's no need for us to provide a public interest defense in the protection of state information. No. Just very briefly, Chair, I thought that we should make that position very clear.
I think we're making a lot of progress to where we were at the end of November, we seem to have broad consensus on the, and we obviously from our side support the split prior and active, and that this ought to be classification. The benefit is clearly, as the previous speakers pointed out, of the limited public interest override that exists in PIRE. But I do think at some stage we need to have a full debate on the whole issue of a public interest defense, which I think is a necessary consideration. The public interest override that exists in Section 46 is a limited public interest override for access. And we've already had an indication that PIRE has got certain problems that can be dealt with at a separate forum, but as pointed out in the Mail and Guardian judgment as well. But yeah, I think we need to at some stage consider the whole international best practice of public interest defences. I don't know whether it's opportune now, but just to bear in mind that the Minister in his briefing on the 22nd of October indicated a preference for the Canadian model. The Canadian model has a specific public interest defence to specific offences. And I think we need to look at that in context, and we would still support a public interest defence to the offences set out in the bill to protect the public and journalists. And if one considers briefly the international situation now with WikiLeaks, where you have, for example, the situation in America, where one has the person that, the Marine, for example, that has the information, he's been charged. But the person, the public, the broadcasters, the media, they're not being charged at all. So there is that international context that one needs to bear in mind. But yeah, I'm not going to labour the point at this stage. We can have a debate on that issue at a later stage. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, we are honourable.
Chair, just to say that agreeing or gaining consensus on a dual system will not solve the public interest defence issue, because one must distinguish, as my honourable colleague has said, between public interest in respect of access and public interest in disclosure. Now, we would support public interest in respect of disclosure. That is a debate that this committee will have to have, but I'm not sure that it's a debate that we want to have today. But it is a debate that comes.
By way of clarity,
Llewellyn,
the Honourable Londres has indicated that as far as energy is concerned, that the I think I heard the Honourable Londres saying that the fact that Section 46 overrides, it's not a defence, it's an override, it means somebody must give the information in certain circumstances. He argues that that exhausts the ANC's position on the whole matter of public interest, and I'm really just indicating that it cannot be the case. So please give us an opportunity later to argue why you must have a public interest defence. It's a different proposition altogether. Let's not take it beyond that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, apologies for not having been here last Friday. I speak with the imminent update before me. We need to finalize this matter by Friday and pending embargo mortis. And I'm concerned about if we need to finalize this by Friday, if we get an extension on life or the data, but the, my...
I'm not sure if you
will. Yeah, you did say that we may get an extension, but let's understand that we end up on Friday at the end.
We will not finish the work.
Okay, then we will not.
I could have come a letter to the House asking for an extension after the report, which I expect. It's not really on that.
Okay, now then
we proceed as we are proceeding.
Let's proceed as we are proceeding.
Now, hear what is being said. I'm trying to relate it to the tailor, read the opinion from the law advisors. We have here a system in which, under Section 28, a request for access to classified records and made in terms of the promotion of access of information act must be dealt with in terms of the act, which suggests that it can be dealt with also in terms of this act. So the dual system comes with a bill. There is not just access and classification. In between, there is declassification. Very often, conceivably, perhaps even typically, there will be a situation in which a document is requested together with a request for declassification. And the person who receives the request for declassification will consider whether or not it is classified. And at that point, the person can very well give it to the requester, locking it into the prior with the information agent or the information officer may not necessarily have the power to classify and declassify, would create an additional layer of difficulty. I do accept the uncomfort that some people may have with the double system and forum shopping. Now, my legal experience from the United States and forum shopping is done all the time between the system, the federal system and the state system. And it works well because one follows the rule, which is more conducive to a result. So if there is an issue of declassification as a precondition to access, it could very well be done in terms of the access. So I don't have conceptually or practically a difficulty to a double system. I want to express a concern which I don't know whether relevant or not. I don't want to accuse any bad motive to anyone. But I am concerned nonetheless that the discussion to PAIA about PAIA not be extended beyond the issue of access. I think it's very relevant to speak about to try to cross-reference this bill and coordinate this bill with PAIA in point of access, but not in point of classification. I would be very concerned if this discussion moves into utilizing PAIA for purposes of classification, because the exceptions in PAIA, which would become the ground for classification, are much broader of what is in the bill. I think the debate should move on the criteria for classification, because that really is the crack of the matter. And I agree with the Honorable Schwartz that we need to deal in classifying with two aspects, both the definitional aspect and the exception. Within the definition, we feel that we must make it clear. We live today in a different age of history since we last met last year. We are in the post-Wikipedia environment. And I think that has changed the world. We need to accept that whatever is fallen within public domain can no longer be deemed as having been classified. So as the Honorable Schwartz indicated, the breach of classification takes place when the document is taken out of the protective environment given to it by classification, the restricted access, the restricted circulation. And once it's taken out of there and given to the public, in the hands of the press, in the hands of anyone who can access it, by definition, the document is in the public domain. I think that that's very important. And I think that that's even more important that the public interest overrides. And we do need to have those type of defenses of the public interest that override and erroneous classification. So I think that those elements are more crucial. And once those are in place, the issue of PAIA may become less thorny than it actually seems.
Thank you.
understand you correctly. You say once a classified document is made public, irrespective of lawfully or unlawfully, it can no longer be deemed to be classified. Is that the crux of your argument on that point, or am I misunderstanding?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You're absolutely right. An open secret is no longer a secret. Once the safe is broken and the secret has been divulged, we need to put in jail the person who broke the safe. But once the gene is out of the bottle, you can't put in jail those who are looking at the gene.
I think we will find fault with that argument, but not today.
No, I was raising a point of order. I don't think this is the time for the public domain discussion. Public domain means when a thing has been published, then it is in public domain, that is my understanding.
Mr. Daniels, you have been excused at 10 o'clock already. I will be this one, throw yourself. Did I see the Honorable Swartz? Yeah, I think the Honourable Smuts is correct that this public domain issue is something we should get to at a later stage, but at this stage the proposition that the Honourable proceeding puts on that is once a secret is disclosed, there's no further need for its protection. I think that's a proposition which has its faults. But we can get to that at appropriate time. Are there any other aspects of PIA that's of concern to the other members? I think it's a bit too early on that issue. I'd like to raise something of my own, if the honourable members are his voice. Thank you so much, Honourable. I appreciate the opportunity. His voice, I've got fire in front of me. It's an original version. Part 4. Dealing with appeals. Appeals against decisions. Chapter 1. Section 74. The request has been refused. I'll just talk through what is happening here now for those that don't have the bill before them. The requester has now been refused. The information officer has refused him information. And the requester now, in terms of 74, may lodge an internal appeal against the decision of the information officer. Public body to that refusal for the request. And as you go on, time periods are set out in 75. That's, I think, basically what that Supreme Court of Appeal case dealt with. And then if you go to 76, now we're dealing now with a relevant authority. This is the person that's going to deal with the appeal that the Honourable Snaps correctly indicated in terms of prior is in most cases defined as the relevant minister. So in 76 reads the relevant authority. In most cases it's defined as the minister, but not in all cases. If a relevant authority is considering an internal appeal against the refusal of a request for access to a record contemplated in those sections, then the authority must inform the third party to whom or which the record relates of the internal appeal, unless all necessary steps to locate the third party have been unsuccessful. So there is a process here now that when an appeal is lodged in terms of that section, there's an obligation on the relevant authority, on the minister, to notify third parties of the appeal. And the section goes on further to set out what sort of information the relevant authority must pass on to the third party. Now, the third party is not the person lodging the appeal. Might be some other, might be in the case, the SCA case that I referred the members to. In that case, it might be the Zimbabwean government. It needs to be notified. In terms of classified information, do you see a problem there now? It almost amounts to a declassification or a notification of some sort or an exposure of classified information. One can understand in the normal course of a request in time, where ultimately the information might least on appeal. But in the case of very, very sensitive classified information, you can understand that this process could be abused. Because a third party might now become aware of certain pieces of information that the third party should not otherwise be made aware of. I thought, are you understanding the argument? Now, I'm putting this question to the Honourable Members. You had an opportunity to get this. I don't know if you could ask me a question, so I don't have to answer. I'm asking the State Law Advisor for an explanation, given that we are coming to a situation we're trying to harmonize in, so we're looking at possible pitfalls and obstacles. Is it an obstacle? And if it is, what can it be overcome?
Thank you for the question. I think it's something that we need to have a look at and consider very carefully in light of the issues that you've raised, because, I mean, as you indicated, the third party might be another person, and also with regard to sensitive information, so we would like the opportunity to just have a look at this and come up with a well-investigated answer to the question, if you don't mind. But it is something that we still have to consider and still need to investigate. Thank you.
Fair enough, Ms. I recognize the Honourable
I just wanted to give you a kind of a first answer. I agree that it must be pulled through. But the reason it is written like that in the prior is because of Chapter 4, your list of grounds for refusal of access to records. And the third-party provisions, they are the ones that that require mandatory refusal, and they deal with other kinds of stuff. They don't need to deal with security. I will precisely argue to you again later when you give me an opportunity why the Protection of the State Information Act ought to be about security, which it isn't at present. Now, if you look at FIRE Chapter 4, the grounds of refusal to information, the mandatory, you cannot, as a State Department, go out giving freely access to information if the personal and private information of a third party is involved. And your first example is under Section 34, where an information officer must refuse a request for access to a record if its disclosure would involve the unreasonable disclosure of personal information about a third party, including a deceased individual. That's personal information. It's not the subject matter of this law. It is the subject matter of the other information. Another example, Section 36. The information officer must refuse a request for access to a record if the record contains the trade secrets of a third party. If a government department is onderhandeling with some entrepreneur on something, it cannot simply disclose to a requester that part of the information which contains the trade secrets of a third party, or the financial, commercial, scientific, or technical information other than trade secrets of a third party. Third party information is stuff that belongs to people, whether it's their business information or their personal information. And therefore, the same applies under 37 to confidential information, where if you don't give this information out, you constitute an action for a breach of confidentiality. So, you see, from our point of view, sir, that is anyway not the subject matter, or ought not to be the subject matter of this bill. It is our view that the subject matter of this bill falls entirely under Section 41. You've heard me on the subject too many times. Defense, security, and international relations of the Republic. And once that is the case, I'm not sure that it's very realistic to think that third parties are going to be an issue, but I may be utterly wrong, and I do agree it needs to be thought through. What if in some intelligence matter there is personal information at issue of somebody? So we do need to think it through. But I think what is just useful to remember at this point is that Section 74 is written the way it is because it has to embrace and encompass all the mandatory refusals of information which belongs personally to individual people, or businessmen, or whatever.
Thank you. Third party is nevertheless defined. If you look at the definition of third party, it's not restricted to a person, it's restricted to a whole, well, also government. It's everybody. It's not limited. Foreign states. See, I can see a situation where you have a document which relates to an informant, or even notify the informant now that there's been a request received. It does become, for those that work in the business of intelligence, whether you're an oversight or whether you, it does create a little bit of an anxiety to overlook this thing without proper research. The Honourable Abbas Sini, was it? The Honourable Swatson.
No, I agree with my colleague Smuts that it's very noteworthy that the references in 76 do not include Section 41. And I think that's the answer. 41 is your defense, security, and international relations. Even possibly, arguably, the situation that you're relating to, an informant, intelligence or crime intelligence, could well possibly fall under 41, which is not referred to in 76. Interestingly enough, so 76 does refer to the override of Section 46. But I think that, Chair, that is the essence. When we drafted FIRE, you might have been part of that as well. I can't tell you specifically remember, but there's a clear indication that there was an intention not to include Section 41
relating to defense, security, and international relations under Section 76 requiring notice to and representation to other parties. Your definition of third party?
Are you suggesting that this thing below is only operating or secure? Aren't they even still blows in social departments? Suggesting that the still blows men should be exposed to the question? Because keep an eye on
Once they let's look at it.
When you're looking at
the top of my head, that's my initial
I would understand that people in security like intelligence and that would have a special concern. But other departments would equally have, you know, they are third parties that could be foreign states. And are you going to get permission? You know, who's going to take that for strategic? That's reclassifying, that's dealing with things. Who's going to take that decision that he's going to operate or communicate with a foreign state at what level? What level do we, as a South Africa, operate or communicate with foreign states? At that level of DG, do we just send a letter to whoever it is in the foreign state and say, we've got a request and we are involving you now in this thing? This is the process. It is something that doesn't just relate to intelligence. I think if you had the weekend that I had to think about, you would see that it's a bit more complex than what the honourable members have suggested. Now, don't we ever see a more substantial argument that take us further?
No, I would like to attempt to answering your question, which I think is a very relevant question. And I would like to do so by recollecting rather than repeating the argument which I presented a few meetings ago last year on what I perceive to be a different conceptual structure between PAIA and this bill and the relevant exceptions and exemptions. As I understand it, the question you put relates to security clearance. If something is classified top secret, it can be handled exclusively by somebody who has a top secret security clearance. So all these people who should make this type of assessment should have a top secret security clearance to even look at the document. But that's not the point. The point is that all these exemptions which apply to fire, whether they're mandatory or enabling, whether they're must or may, operate on a different level. Because if something is classified top secret, it cannot be given up. If it is classified top secret incorrectly, then what one deals with is the process of declassification. And these sections that the Honorable Smart has referred to, sections 38, 39, and 42 of PAIA, then should become criteria for declassification. But that still requires the person who declassifies and undertakes this process to have the security clearance and the authority to handle the information and to declassify the information, which brings us back into the four corner of the bill before us. And that's the first answer. I'm not sure whether I've been sufficiently clear. The second aspect is that if one looks at section 42, 38, 39, and 42 of PAIA, and the criteria for classification, there is a disconnect. Many of these grounds on which an information must or may be withheld are what the last time I referred to as ontological. You look at the substance of it. If it is this type of substance, you must keep it out or you may withhold it. You must withhold it or you may withhold it. The ground for classification in this deal is what I define as functional. Anything can be classified if once it's closed, it's going to hurt the Republic, it's going to create havoc, etc., etc. So this is a disconnection. And there is where I think that there are extreme limits in bringing the discussion about Syria beyond the reference that it is set out in Section 28. I mean, I must say that with the amendment that I proposed, where the must, where the main becomes must, and if something must be disclosed in terms of Syria, then it must be declassified. With that exception, I felt quite comfortable with the bill the way it was. Don't look at me in the tone of voice.
Honorable, I've seen you dealing now with, I think, a different...
I'm answering the question.
So sorry, I was trying to answer the question you put on the state law advisor, or perhaps not answer, but to me, to you, my take on your question. Because your question leads to the highlight, the difficulty of taking these provisions of FIA and making them the criteria through which access to a document is given to this document, from the very practical aspect that you have identified.
I get to understand that, Honourable Member. Honourable Member, there's a request from the State Law Advisors Department to consider this thing in greater detail and to return to the committee from an informed position. Honourable Lord.
Chair, I think it would only be fair to allow for us to give it that space. Consider the response to your request. So that would be all.
Honourable Member, the consensus, because this isn't the consensus on that point, Honourable Member. Let's not close this debate on the fire. We are, and I've said this before, this is one of the very more important aspects of the bill, harmonizing the bill with fire. We are going to take as much time as what we need. So let's give Ms. Boy the opportunity to research that thing and report back to the committee on that. Boy, I don't want to put it to you now because I'm sure you're not yourself aware how long it will take you, but can I liaise with you perhaps later this afternoon so that you can report to the committee tomorrow if you're not available tomorrow to report yet, just how long we can expect to wait for that opinion. I'll contact the office and you can give me some idea. Call back to the committee just as when we can expect you, so that we can put you on the program. On all members then, let's leave fire for the moment. Let's go to the second item on the agenda, and that is to give the Honourable Smuts an opportunity to address us on what she considers to be quite an important aspect of the poll. Now, this is not dealing with PIA. We are reserving the PIA thing because we can't take it any further. There's no further questions on the PIA thing, so let's just understand. We're not jumping around. This was a matter which we had agreed that the Honourable much will be allowed the opportunity to address. I understand the argument is not really wrong, but let's hear the argument and we can decide how to deal with the aspects, and there will be questions. Over to you, Honourable Smuts.
Thank you. So, we have said so many times that the primary and preeminent need is to answer the question, what should be classified? That I don't want to tax your patience by taking too much of your time. we've offered our answer to the question, what should be classified? There should be intelligence and security matters, and there might be a few others, such as international relations. But just to attempt to persuade our colleagues that we need to answer the question, what should be qualified, I'd like to quote from a few things, and very briefly. This is a description that emanates from an ANC ministry, and it's dated 13 June 2008. The heading is the need for a new information protection regime. The current system requires the spending of a great deal of government resources to protect a mass of information that does not actually require protection. The absence of a comprehensive statutory framework has resulted in an unstable and inconsistent classification and declassification environment, excessive costs, and inadequate implementation. Government departments are straining under the burden of massive amounts of classified documentation. A lack of clarity and direction on what actually requires protection has resulted in this state of affairs. The current protection regime, some of which was inherited from the apartheid era, encourages the needless protection of huge amounts of information. There still exists, to some degree, a default position of secrecy. This approach is inconsistent with South Africa's new constitutional order. A statutory framework is required which can deal with questions such as what information may be classified and what information may not be classified, and secondly, who may classify information. All of that was from the Capital Ministry, which first tabled this bill. The system, which is described in the paragraph I just read, the massive overclassification, the excessive cost, the inadequate implementation, all of that still exists, presumably. Presumably nothing has changed between 13 June 2008 and now. So that is the situation against which this bill is tabled. And this bill sets out apparently to answer the question what information may be classified, but the question was never answered. Instead, in the Casserole bill, the national interest, if you remember, became your definition of essentially, that it was the pivot upon which classification rested. We as a committee have now excised it. We've taken the definition of national interest out, because it would mean absolutely anything. The Casserole bill didn't answer the question, what? Gave us the national interest as your definition, and it also incidentally gave you all organs of state for your application. Our argument, when that same bill, really, to all intents and purposes, 100% the same bill, maybe 95% the same bill, was retabled last year. We naturally protested and said the same things, that this bill should deal with national security and intelligence. Civil society also made its voice heard. And clearly, it's clear to us that the minister went back to the drawing board and looked at some of our arguments. Perhaps, I don't know, perhaps he looked at the bill for the first time, but he came back in October last year with the following position. We've been arguing for national security and intelligence from the start. It seemed to us in October that the minister had pretty much adopted the same view. He said, this approach, he's describing the approach that he wishes to take. Let me take it from the top. He asked, what information do we seek to protect? During the first submission of this presentation, he said, we argued that we were recommending the Canadian approach of listing issues of concern to national security as the advisable approach in our considered opinion. We argued that this approach ensures that the definition's reach is clear, precise, and limited. We indicated that we wanted to, one, protect legitimate national intelligence structures, sources, two, legitimate operational methods, doctrine, facilities, and personnel of secure discussion. 3. Sensitive confidences in international relations. 4. Ongoing investigations of state security structures. 5. Details of criminal investigations and legitimate police and law enforcement methods. Lastly, economic, scientific, or technological secrets vital to the Republic's stability, security, integrity, and development. The above wording, you said, is similar to that used in the Canadian Security of Information Act. So we have been working on the Canadian Security of Information Act ever since then. We find it a very interesting law. We think there are sections of it we can use. But only once we have taken the decision that this bill is about security and intelligence. The minister clearly is thinking along the same lines we are. We could make great progress if we all agree that that is what this bill must be about. And once we decide what it is we classify along the lines in the minister's list, along the lines that we have put from the start, once we decide what we want to classify, it follows that you list which are the departments or agencies that will be classifying this stuff and who will be appointing security personnel. And to that end, we would argue that we want a schedule attached to the bill. So that is just another attempt to try to ask you to consider dealing precisely with, and I mean in with precision of drafting is what I mean, with the subject matter of the bill. What is it we want to classify? Who is it that will be classifying that? Because, as I said earlier, the first principle of the rule of law and therefore constitutionalism and the founding provision of our constitution in 1C, the first principle is clarity and precision. We must all know what the law requires someone who's implementing to do and what we as a citizen are supposed to obey. And if we don't make it clear that we're dealing with national security, which security structures we're dealing with, you can't tell every organ of state under the good Lord's good son to participate in this act when they really don't know what on earth it is they're supposed to be doing. So we have made a very good start in defining national security, redefining it. We haven't reached finality. We would like the 2008 definition. Once we've done that, let's talk about what do we classify and then write. Let's write the classification section, knowing that what we're dealing with is exactly national security and intelligence. Once we've written the classification section, we write the offence. So it's just a plea from our side, saying again that we want this bill to deal clearly with national security. And may we just lastly remind you, sir, in the minister's presentation, 22 October, he offered us a presentation. He said, I've tasked the ministry staff working with the state security agency to prepare a briefing, which they would present to the ad hoc committee on how other democratic countries have sought to deal with these issues, being the security and intelligence issues. For this presentation, suffice to indicate that countries such as Australia, Brazil, Canada, Kenya, New Zealand, and Zambia are also grappling with the above challenges. And we would like to ask to have that presentation, if our colleagues agree. And in fact, I remember, sir, that you were even thinking of having the information presentation again for my benefit. And I think Mr. Mania has other presentations that he would also like to see.
Just to add on that, I mean, we've asked for 3 presentations. The first one is the minister's promised presentation.
On the presentation of the honourable Smuts, is that presentation finished? And Mr. Mania, from the end, he would also like a hostile assistant presentation. Yes. That's one presentation. So, by you,
may we ask questions from the speaker?
This is the presentation. Is,
its final stages. I don't think it's finished.
Yeah.
It's a dual presentation. Hello, man.
Chair, thank you for the opportunity. Really, just we've spoken about three presentations. The one is the presentation which the minister committed to doing on the 22nd. The other, of course, is the information peddling presentation. Many members of this committee are new, and I think would benefit from the information peddling presentation. Just for the record, or let me move. I also think then that we need a presentation on the hostile activities offence. If you look through the documentation, the department makes an argument in support of an espionage offence. They make an argument in respect of an information peddling offence, but nowhere do they make an argument that convinces me that we need a hostile activities offence. And I think that it's incumbent on the department to motivate why in this current climate they require a hostile activity offence.
Raising your presentation. Honourable members, can you please, you can now add yourself. Is there something else? Honourable Mayor, you want to amend? The information peddlers we've had at this presentation. And there was a controversy around that presentation. And I just want to spell it out. The committee having agreed that we will receive the presentation in the form that the minister has given. Okay. When the minister came, he was under the impression that the presentation would be done in closed committee. After consulting the minister and persuading him, I put the proposition to the committee that the minister was prepared to do the presentation without circulating any documents. The presentation was then run on the screen, and the minister accepted the undertaking that was given to him by the committee, because I had put that request by the minister live in front of everybody. The minister then, on that condition, decided to give us what was a very good presentation. No document was circulated that was in condition. I understand subsequently there was a request for the document. The Honourable Mayor was the request. The request also came to me. I made it clear that I did not have a copy of the document, nor did the committee have a document. It was the minister's document. And the request was not directed at the right person. Well, now, I don't want to debate that thing. That position of the information peddlers, I will canvass with the ministry to see if the ministry is happy to come. I know there will be conditions again, because in that document there are plenty made. There's a lot of other classified things. I've seen that thing with my own eyes, so I know, but at a different level. In the Intelligence Committee, I've seen that thing. So, if the minister is going to say yes, that would be his prerogative to say yes. And I will inform the committee. I will formally write to him and see what his view is. Regarding other countries dealing with classification, my understanding that Mr. Dennis Longmore from the ministry at some time did do such a presentation to this committee on the classification systems, particularly on the Canadian system. If I am confused on that one, then I apologize. But I do recall Mr. Duomo addressing this committee, particularly on the Canadian system, saying that he had researched this thing and advising us, particularly on the public interest, on public interest defense too. But regarding hostile activities, offenses, we've been there, but you know, I don't know what the presentation is that you're expecting, but we can look at that. I recognize the find time to, do you want to amend them? Do you want to question your own book? You want to question your presentation, because I'm going to open up. I'm full on your presentation. Honorable Mayor, in the life.
For the record, I don't recall a presentation by Mr. Dlomo from the State Security. For the record, I don't recall such a presentation, but if indeed one was made, perhaps Mr. Dlomo would make the document on which he based his presentation available to the committee. That's the first point. The second point, just two facts that might be helpful, Chair, in respect of the information peddling presentation, just so that you know my appeal, and everybody knows this is for a presentation made in an open committee in front of committee members with the media present, my appeal was turned down by the Ministry on the grounds that disclosure of the information, which has already been disclosed, could reasonably expect it to cause prejudice to the defense and security of the public, which seems bizarre. And in fact, on a light note, the document denying the appeal is classified confidential.
Honorable member, your naughty behavior in terms of that request is something that amazed me, given that when the minister sat next to me and made it quite clear that he was not prepared to present in an open meeting, I salvaged the situation which I put to the committee, which you supported. You supported the conditions under which the minister would be allowed to present. So, this naughty request of yours after the meeting, I really understand. So that's a matter between you and not the committee. I don't know who else. Certainly not the committee. Honourable Abrasini, can we get progress on this?
Can we get back and forth, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, thank you.
And I think we have been dealing with this issue since the beginning. And at a certain time, at a certain point, perhaps we need to have clarity on it, and we need to dispose of it. What needs to be classified? Who needs to classify? The Honourable Smart spoke at great length about what needs to be classified, but I think what she said can be summarized in two expressions that we use time and again: intelligence and security matters. Agreed. Then she spoke very briefly about who needs to classify, who can classify. And because what needs to be classified is intelligence and security matters, she drew the conclusion, she said, it follows that the only departments involved in classifying are the departments which deal with intelligence and security matters as part of their line functional responsibility. Now, this, I think, is the critical aspect. It follows. And I'm going to put my view on the matter. I'm not saying that I'm correct, but I think I'm correct in saying that this is a crucial issue. I don't think it does follow. Security matters cut across each and every organ of state. The location of the backup hard drive, in which all the computer software of the specific department is preserved in a safe, I would guess that that should be classified top secret, because that is arguably a potential terrorist attack. I mean, they get to the and poof, all the software of the department is gone. The combination to the safe, I mean, each department will have safe. The combination to the safe, I think that should be also classified as top secret or secret. It is part of the functionality of an organization to classify information. But this is where we need to have agreement. Then, so that's the first aspect where I don't think that from the what it follows necessarily the who. Then the third step taken in the Honorable Smith presentation is the how. Now, to me, the how is the crack. If you look at clauses 6 and 7, they create a very onerous system in terms of which the intelligence agent utilizes effectively as proxies all the organs of state who shall do as they command, and they hold them accountable. And in a system in which all the other relevant considerations, such as information, access to information, accountability, free flow of information, are subject to the last proviso 6, which is, the security of the Republic. So the security of the Republic is paramount. And in pursuance of that, in 7, the minister in charge of the security of the Republic can prescribe categories and subcategories of information, can enforce the prescriptions, and effectively create the type of situation which the Honorable Smith has very graphically and effectively described as a bunch of spook running amok throughout all the departments. Fighting class for the nation. So I think that this is a very real problem. But it doesn't take much to solve the problem. I mean, our suggestion, one looks at 6, J doesn't become the paramount, but becomes subject to. So that the security of the Republic needs to be balanced with the other element, with the free flow of information. And that balancing act is performed by each and every Director General. And in that context, the prescription of the Minister of Security are not prescriptions, but non-binding guidelines to assist the Director General to perform his task. It shouldn't be not any different than any other law of the state. There are regulations, the regulations apply, they're issued by the minister, and they apply to everyone. But then there are manuals to help people. And the regulations will implement the act to the extent the act needs to be implemented. But each department implements regulations of other departments. That needs to have people coming in there doing it for them. The department, everyone has got cars, they all implement regulations on how to operate those cars. And there is no department of transport that goes around checking people's driving licenses. But I think that these are the issues. So to summarize, I do agree on the what should be limited to intelligence and security matters. I have a problem with the who. Whoever has got things to classify should be able to classify. And on the how, let each department do it. Let's have a balancing of interest, and let's limit the function of the security apparatus to run the security of the country and not indirectly run each and every of our departments.
I think what does follow from the Honorable Smith's argument is that it is a restriction on the application of the law. So you're actually dealing with, in terms of the original bill, clause 3, you're actually arguing for a restriction on the application of the bill as set as in clause 3. No, of the new bill. Or of any of the amendments to the bill which were. That follows. But I mean, it follows from your argument that you're asking for the restriction on that, on clause 3. But as the Honorable Abrasini pointed out, it doesn't follow in terms of what he's arguing. That doesn't follow. Just before we go there, so if I understand the Honorable Abrasini is happy that the bill
applying to organs of state as set out in Clause 3. I just wanted to make sure. Honorable Lawrence, can we just, Honorable Maynard, because you might have a complete response if Honorable Maynard?
Thank you, Chair. I think that the Honorable Ambrosini is both right and wrong. First, he is wrong. It does follow that if we restrict the scope of the bill to for what the minister calls national security issues or issues of concern to national security, then it does follow that not every organ of state, and I say based on our debate that this committee cannot even name every organ of state, but it does not follow that every organ of state would be engaged in, for example, functions such as protecting the legitimate national intelligence structures, sources, ongoing investigations. It does not follow that every organ of state would be involved in those kinds of activities. And it's for that reason that we believe that this committee must apply its mind and name those institutions and limit the scope of this bill. Chair, that was paragraph one. No. But I do think, yes. So the Honourable Ambrosini is wrong in that respect. It does follow that where he's right and where I think that his proposals will strengthen the bill is to look at limiting the minister's discretion by introducing non-binding guidelines, and also limiting the state security agents, agency's ability to review. It's already limited. It does not include the Defence Force or the police. So I think that would strengthen the problem. Thank you.
And may I remind you that the Minister has already said he doesn't want to do that anymore. He wants to devolve the department to the head of department.
Clarify one sentence, Mr. Chairman. I did not say, just for clarity's sake, that all organs of state should have the power should have in fact the power to classify. I say that all organs of state may potentially have the necessity and therefore acquire the power to classify. In fact, that very few of them will have that necessity, but we cannot identify if it's need which creates function.
Honourable members, I think your arguments have been exhausted. I have the Honourable Landers and then the Honourable Dexter. And then the Honourable Fichler.
Yes.
Honourable Landers, Honourable Dexter, Honourable Fichler.
Chairperson, yes, it's good that we've reached this point where we've afforded the DA an opportunity to make their case. My own view, I express the opinion is that the DA's approach is somewhat simplistic. It fails to take into account some harsh realities. You're quite correct when you say that the DA is arguing for exemptions or for the doing away of exemptions and for the very strict application of the law. So it poses a few questions. Is it possible that there may be national security secrets in other areas of the state outside of the areas identified by the Honorable Dean? The reality is that there are areas. And these must be protected. I'm going to give a few of them just to give you some examples. They fall outside the intelligence and national security terrain. Dual use technology, particularly as it relates to nuclear capacity, not an intelligence matter, not a national security.
The DA's approach ignores our international obligations to counter proliferation, for example. No. We go on to the areas of weapons of mass destruction. No. Whether we can find them or not,
is a state secret.
No, aside from it being or not being a state secret, do they exist? Are we able to produce them? Well, the dictator says we can. Probably do. I don't know. He has more information than some of us do in this room. And then we go on to matters that give rise to health pandemics. They don't fall within the category of national security or intelligence. We are in the post 9/11 world as we sit here. The people dealing with aviation security are critical to national security and to public safety. But they're not part of the traditional security services. So could they also be excluded? They can't be. All these checklists must be covered by the Act in the way that it's been set out in the country. And so the attempt to narrow its application throws out the baby with the bathwater. It places South Africa in serious danger. The solution lies in ensuring that those secrets that exist in whichever organs of state they may do, are indeed protected. Where there are no state secrets, of course, those organs of state can apply for exemption, which is provided for in the law. And so the narrowing, as requested by the Honorable Dean Smut and the Democratic line, is not going to suggest anything else. It's going to place this country in serious danger, and some of us shudder to think what the end result of that would be. Just very briefly, that is some of the issues I thought I would raise following the Honourable Dean's comments. Because you see, the Minister, in his response to us on 22 October last year, touched on in five, where you looked at economic, scientific, etc. Those are fields that don't traditionally and normally fall under intelligence or national security. Well, they shouldn't. But can you say that there are no matters there that don't require protection in terms of this body? Well, see, Mr. Ambrosini is correct. Mr. Ambrosini is correct. The head of the organ of state will know where the dangerous areas are, and he will request, or he will classify. So, whether he shouldn't or should is a matter we can debate. The rest of the input dealt with presentations of our activities and information peddling. I want to suggest, Chairperson, propose that we ask Mr. Blommel to make that presentation again. I don't see anything wrong with it if some people on the committee have missed. I would think it would be welcomed. But just in brief, those are some of my comments responding to the article.
Honourable Members, now there is an argument subject. If I must say so myself, I've heard something now that makes sense. Not that some of the other things I've heard are not making sense, but it shows you there are two very awake members in the committee. The Honourable Abrasini and the Honourable Rogers are mindful of the dangers and security problems that we are facing. And I think it is only welcome that Mr. the Honourable Longus has identified some of those areas which the Honourable Smuts and the Honourable Mania's presentation did not deal with. Now, we are going to go to the Honourable Dexter and then to the Honourable Fichler before we come back to you. If you have an answer to this very powerful argument, we'll hear it. The Honourable Dexter.
Thank you. I think you're intimidating us.
Are you suggesting that argument of the Honourable Longus was about substance, sir?
I just want to say, first of all, in response to one of the things that the Longus said, that in fact, you know, weapons of mass destruction can be created in people's bedrooms. You can get the information off the internet. So it's not that I have any state secrets. It's just that, you know, and I think it's a good example, because I think you've got to distinguish between what the state has to do to protect its own integrity and information from what people do in the rest of society. And I think there are two approaches philosophically to this. The one is, as I think the book attempts to do, create a broad definition, put everything in it, and then, you know, that way, hopefully, you think that you've created a system in which you're able to control information. I mean, the debates about this have been endless. It's impractical, it's too expensive, etc. And, you know, it goes against the grain of our constitution and even what the bill says itself in the opening paragraph. The second approach is to limit the definition, which is, I think, what my colleagues from the DA are saying, and to some extent, the same. But then you create the problem, as you said, what about those things that fall outside that narrow definition? My view is that there are two things you have to do. The one is, you've got to distinguish when you talk about economic and scientific information about what are those things that are of proprietary interest that have an economic value. Because that's not a matter of national security, but it may be a matter of economic importance for an entity. I mean, that's just, as you said, the nuclear industry. They may come up with technology that gives them a competitive advantage. Like any business, they'd want to protect that. But the question as to whether protecting that information is a matter of security is another thing. And I think that's the problem. How do you create that distinction? My own view would be that we are safer going for a limited definition and then creating an enabling mechanism in the Act whereby the heads of those other agencies and all those sorts of things, because as you rightly say, they would know what part of their business or activities needs to be protected, are then able to approach the minister and to identify those and say, we think that this particular matter or this information or these issues need to be protected, and therefore we'd want to ensure that that process unfolds to ensure that that happens. And that would secondly create a record, because the fear everyone has is of abuse. If I'm the head of a local government which is dysfunctional and you know, I want to cover up for the fact that there's been massive corruption or maladministration, I could make an argument that this is a matter that should be protected. But if it's upon me to show why to the minister, and you could create a tribunal or anything of that nature that would adjudicate the dispute, then as an official, I'm going to have to be very sure that I'm not asking for the Act to be applied just to protect my own interests or something else, but because there's a genuine matter of national security. And I think that that would be less administratively burdensome, it would resolve all the issues of these disputes and so on, and it would provide for the point that you make, which I believe is valid. There are things outside the narrow scope of national security that we need to cover. So I would want to suggest that that may be an approach that's worth looking at. You know, I want to end by saying that the real problem that we face is the presumption of benevolence and competence on the part of the people who run these entities. You know, quite honestly, if you look at what we've all experienced, and it's not a party political matter, that presumption is one that I think has been sorely, sorely damaged by the way in which people have behaved in these institutions over a period of time. Going back to the previous government, it's, you know, it's not a matter that arises in post-1994. So that's why I say, philosophically, it's our responsibility to balance these two issues. And doing it that way around seems to me a lot safer than this blanket of excluding everybody and everything under the sun.
Honourable
Fisher?
Thank you. Member says he's getting tired of all the repetition. Some of the arguments are being repeated over and over again. I think that's what the Honourable Member is saying. And to the extent that the Honourable Member is correct, I'd like to support him. But my view is different. My view is that matters that we are dealing with are serious and that we need to exhaust them in a proper manner. And so repetition has been allowed on occasion because Smith, I never intervene when you talk unless you are being unruly, necessarily unruly. But let's be fair to the Honourable Fichler and try and be, because the Honourable Fichler is now also raising the issue about us moving in circles and we don't want to create the impression that we are rushing. But we also don't want to create the impression that we are necessarily delaying the process, which is the point that I think the Honourable Fichler is making. So let's be fair. The Honourable Members, is it the Honourable Mania now?
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to respond to the Honourable Landers, and I disagree with the Honourable Fick. We are not moving in circles. It's my impression that finally today we might be moving forward. Now, our point is that we need to define what it is we want to classify.
We have put forward an argument which is roughly consistent with the minister's argument that we should, that the information that ought to be classified should be national security related. The Honourable Landers is concerned that there might be other kinds of information, given what he calls the post-9/11 world, which he feels ought to be classified. Our point is this, Chair. Let's have that debate. There might be merit to the Honourable Landers arguing, for example, that there are some, there is some technology, sovereign technology, and that information about that sovereign technology ought to be classified. There may be merit to that argument, but let's apply our mind to the argument. Let us say conclusively and unequivocally what information needs to be classified and what institutions are therefore ought to be classifying information. And if the Honourable Landers believes that the scope goes beyond simply state security agencies, then let's put those arguments on the table, let's consider them. But let's always be aware that if the scope of the bill is as wide as it is in the current legislation, then exactly the Honourable Landers' point from last week. What if this bill applies to universities and would give the minister and state security agencies wide powers to go through the bottom drawers of our universities? If that is the case, then he's absolutely correct. There will be an outcome. And we have a responsibility to ensure that that doesn't happen.
I'll be short. No, I reflect on what the Honourable Speaker said, and first, he's right. I mean, my immediate reaction was not positive. I feel that a great deal is at stake. And if we were to move on a close-by-close analysis, actually reading the bill, many of these issues would find a consensus and possible resolution by means of amendments, because many of the things that we've been discussing are either dealt with in the bill or can easily be dealt with by means of amendments, and perhaps that even where there is less agreement on the theory and the concept, the people can find agreement on the words. So my suggestion would be to start getting on a close-by-close analysis and see the arguments have been heard.
Honourable Epicini, I think, perhaps in your absence, perhaps not, what we had looked at was to deal with some of the very important objections, concerns that was raised in the public hearing, and also to look at some of the concessions which the minister had drawn our attention to in his response to the public hearing. What we identified in that scenario was that there was this broad definition. And it indicated the question of national security, national interest, public interest. And we came up there with a very working solution which everybody was comfortable with. One of the other aspects which was important, you will recall, was the synchronizing the bill with fire, which is the matter which we were dealing with now, and we have been dealing with some time. The other matter that we were dealing with was the whistleblowers, the Disclosure Act, the Protected Disclosures Act, which was a matter which was very, very powerfully argued in the president in the public hearings, and we've looked at that and we've resolved that problem. We've also looked at the minimum sentence, which was another matter that had been raised in the public hearings. We went to the Criminal Law Amendment Act, which was specifically enacted to deal with minimum sentences, and looked at how we could the bill deal with that particular aspect where people were unhappy that some of the sentences were too severe. So it was in that context that there was a lot of work to be done in specific areas. And we thought that the proper way to deal with it is to see if we can't resolve those major areas first, because it seemed that once those things were dealt with, the clause-by-clause process would be much easier. So we are going to get to the clause-by-clause process soon. I think as soon as we have clarity on the prior situation, we would have perhaps looked at all the matters of concern, all the major ones that we needed to look at. So I hope, Honourable Apresini, you understand that. I know it might not be perfect process, but it was always going to be understood that this process was not going to be forced. It's going to take some time. Honourable Member? Are we stuck now? Is this where we are? There was a comment which the Honourable Smuts made earlier, which I had left unattended. I thought the Honourable Landers would be with it. And it was a reference to some ANC document. I'm not sure what document the Honourable Smuts was. No, it's not whatever. So it was a document from the minister. Not a, yeah, but it was not an ANC document. I was just confused.
Listen very carefully. It's a casual ministry document. It is not an ANC document. Mm-hmm. Well, you'll have to ask Ronnie the next time you have tea with him.
Honourable Member, it was just, I'm not taking the argument any further. I just wanted the accuracy of the statement, because I didn't know what document you had. If it was a document presented by the ANC, then I would have. I just said that nothing circled, nothing circulates around it. It was just that I wanted it to appear that it seemed to me at the time it wasn't an ANC document, and it seems now that I was correct. Are there any other issues of clarity? Because if not, we are going to look at the way forward. The question of whether Mr. Dlumo is going to make any presentation whatsoever is a question that the minister must decide, and not Mr. Dlumo. It comes from the ministry. And it would only be proper to write to the ministry to ask whether it is possible it would be the minister's decision whether such a presentation would be made or not. I thought I'd just, if it is the committee's view that I should approach the minister and I should write to him with the necessary instruction. I just want to understand what it is that is going to be sought in that presentation. I understand the pettiness, but these are requests directed at the minister, and it doesn't follow that if the request is directed that the presentations will be made, particularly the one on the pettiness, given the previous experience. So I just want some guidelines. Should I direct a letter to the minister requesting, or what is the position? Yes, I need those slides.
We would be delighted if you would so write to the minister, and may we suggest that what we're requesting is precisely what he set out at page 8 of his presentation of 22 October. I have therefore tasked the ministry staff working with the State Security Agency to prepare a briefing which they would present to the ad hoc on how other democratic countries have sought to deal with these issues. For this presentation, suffice to indicate that countries such as Australia, Brazil, Canada, Kenya, New Zealand, Zambia are also grappling with the above challenges and they are therefore not attempting to exceptionalize in Canada. That, it appears to me, is precisely the briefing we're looking for.
The Honourable Abdelsina.
Yes, forgive me for repeating myself, but I did say this a few meetings ago, but it becomes topical again. And it's been mentioned several times today, looking at foreign experiences. I, for one, have no interest in such a briefing. And the reason why I don't is that the legislation on intelligence and securities apparatus formed during the years of the Cold War in the United States, in Canada, in the UK, in Germany, in Australia, should not form a guideline for this legislation. I think we have the burden of writing something which can become the guideline for security legislation in the 21st century in an open society, in a society characterized by transparency and not by secrecy. I think what has been done, the international standard in this case, is not a benchmark that we as a committee should take into account. I'm always the one in other committees, in other legislation, who appeals to international standards, but not in this case. And I think that we should legislate with an open mind, trying to avoid the mistakes of secrecy. We talk about 9/11. Perhaps the security apparatus in the United States was not shrouded as it is in secrecy, we could perhaps find out what really happened on that fateful day.
I'll get to you now. Honourable Abrasini, in my request to the Honourable Minister, shall I notify him that you're not interested in this presentation?
And that we will go it alone.
Might influence his decision, I just thought. Yes, Honourable Main.
Chair, I wondered if it occurred to the Honourable Abrasini that perhaps in the jurisdictions in Australia, Brazil, Canada, Kenya, New Zealand and Zambia, they perhaps were aware that they were in the 21st century and might well have been pioneering some legislation themselves or some amendments to their legislation which we might benefit from.
I think when the Honourable Abrasini first raised this thing many months ago, I think it was on the understanding that he himself had to look at some of these things. Because I recall him talking about the reasons why information might have been restricted in those years, where even your receipts from Pick and Pay and Colonel Saunders and all those other shopping centers very often be classified by government. That was in the Cold War area. I think I'm just exaggerating, but I think that was the point that the Honorable Abrasini was made. He didn't think if he went to McDonald's that it was in those areas, in that era, that a McDonald's receipt shouldn't be classified. But what he was arguing for, the times have changed. We no longer live in closed society, and that for that reason, the reasons for classification and the whole concept of classification should be looked at. I think which is the point that the honourable member is making now. But I think if that is what the research reveals, then I think perhaps we should be informed that that is in fact the case. If that is not the case, let us be informed that that is not the case, that things, international jurisdictions have looked at the modern society and have adjusted their legislation accordingly. The Honourable Swart.
washing your hands off this matter. regarding the peddling, there'll be no takers on the peddlers. I won't forget in the letter. I shall merely request from the minister a presentation on the international best practice on these issues.
Sure. In response to that, I noticed in the minister's presentation, when he makes his remarks about the presentation that he's asked his staff to work on, he appears to be addressing two things. Firstly, his revised approach to this bill, what do we want to classify, and then the list that I read to you. Then secondly, he says, we also seek in national security, these are now the other activities, extracurricular to the classification aspects of the law. We also seek to negate hostile acts, the foreign intervention, terrorist-related activities, information peddling, espionage, and unlawful acts against the constitutional order. So perhaps the presentation does or can deal with both of these, the classification issue, national security, and quite separately the list of matters that you chose to itemize that ministry attends to. Shall I just zip through them again? Negate hostile acts of foreign intervention, terrorist and related activities, information peddling, espionage and unlawful acts against constitutional order. Perhaps if the presentation deals with both things, that's one way to approach the separate issue. Then that's no longer a separate issue whether we want the presentation on information peddling. Could we not refer him to his own speech and ask for that presentation, and we would be delighted if it encompassed both the what should be classified aspect and the second list on page 8, which is other stuff they also do. What do you think?
Honourable member, you want me to think now? Why do you want me to think? Also, I'm the committee members to think. Okay, honourable members, let's decide now. I'm going to adjourn soon. The purpose of adjourning is to give the state law advisor an opportunity to look into the issue of PIE, the issues which I have raised and which seem to create a problem that needs to be resolved. We are not going to meet them tomorrow because I doubt and think it would be unfair for the state law advisor to come back tomorrow into an important matter. I would hope that on Thursday there would be an opportunity to hear the state law advisor at 9:30. I will also write to the minister to see what the position is, whether we can have a presentation this week. What is the minister's position? Regarding the argument put today by the Honourable Mania and the Honourable Smuts, I think that argument we will keep in mind when we get down to dealing with clause by clause, when we get down to dealing with the application of the bill. Because at this stage I don't think we're in a position where we want to take a decision on these matters, but I think the arguments having been heard from both sides have been useful, and they are to be noted so that when we come to, at some time or another, we are going to have to take a decision on what is the way forward. And at that stage we would like to take decisions from an informed position, that we know what we are talking about, that matters have been properly looked at and properly restored. Honourable Kutsi, before I adjourn, can I hear you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's just, I wouldn't say important, but it's interesting to say that listening to the arguments this morning regarding the organ of state which might have information to be classified, and taking into account what the Honourable Dini have said about 9/11, is, taking into account what's said this morning about organs of state that might have information to be classified, and also referring to the 9/11, that we would like to know, you know, what are the reasons of what happened there, but because of the fact that it is classified, it is also a known fact that because of over-classifying, extensive classifying of information between the security departments of the USA, 9/11 could have been avoided.
Sir, I'm not an expert on 9/11. So I don't know whether it could or could not have been avoided. Honorable Landers.
Well, it's something that perhaps we should debate. Of the flow. Mr. Kutsi raises an important point, and I think Sandra really touched on it as well. It is now an established fact within the intelligence community in America that one of the reasons 9/11 occurred was because the various intelligence services didn't share information. And secondly, they lacked a coordinating mechanism. So it wasn't a question of them having opened everything up and in that way prevented 9/11. It was rather a case of each one sitting in his or her silo and refusing to share what effectively was crucial information that if the others had access to, not the general public, not the media, then perhaps they could have prevented.
Honourable members, I am not going to voice a view on behalf of this committee as to what the 9/11 situation was. I don't want the Americans to sue us. Whatever happened there, I think it was very unfortunate. The reasons, I think it's too late now to speculate. It's not going to help us. I think the Americans have learned, and perhaps our security people will learn from that, but for the purposes of the committee, the accuracy or the inaccuracy of statements regarding to why or why not is another matter. Honourable Simi, are you got a quick matter you want to resolve?
No, I want to clarify what was being said and what Andrew was being said about 9/11, which is quite important to the deliberations of this committee. Because the fact, Mr. Chairman, that you and I have a very imprecise idea of what 9/11 was, even though it was the turning point of history, because you and I, as anywhere else, and anyone else who are civilians, who are not top secret and cleared, do not have access to critical information which the entire world is trying to get about 9/11. It remains classified. So this 9/11 identifies the evil of a world run by securities. And it is in itself, for anyone who investigates the difficulty of accessing information about 9/11, what really happened, identifies the type of problem which this legislation could create in a country like South Africa.
Honorable members, I accept that remains your personal views on the matter of 9/11. I will not attribute the views of 9/11 to the committee as such. As regards tomorrow, we are not going to meet tomorrow in order to allow the state law advisor to come and brief us on the matter of the appeal procedures and third party procedures in the trial. If there's no further questions, no further clarifications, honorable member, then this meeting stands adjourned until Thursday at 9:30. The venue, you've got notice of the venue. It's not this venue, it's another venue on Thursday. On Thursday, the meeting is in D454, the fourth floor old assembly wing. Website. By the chief website. So So the lift you take up is on the other side, near to the Chief Whip's office of the Majority Party on Friday. On Friday the meeting is at 9:30, and that is in E249, the second floor new wing, the room just above the new National Assembly. Honourable members, the meeting is adjourned.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh.